Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Thursday. You are almost to Snowmageddon. I mean, we are getting close to Friday. Just stand by. We're going to get you all the way to the end of the week, and it is indeed Thursday. Sometimes we call it Turbo Thursday. Sometimes we call it Friday Eve. All I know is JP's running the board. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm all right.
Is the board fighting back right now?
No, it's not. We're up on the website, by the way.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we got it fixed. So we are live streaming on the website. If anybody listening was having issues earlier, it's fixed. So there you go.
Just click on it. There it is. All right. Hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. You doing good? You ready for Snowmageddon?
I'm bracing.
Get your milk and bread?
Bracing for impact, yeah.
It looks like it scaled down somewhat.
Yeah, it scaled down a little bit. I'd like to see a little bit of snow, but not enough to inhibit anything.
Yeah.
So hopefully we don't just get cold rain.
I think the danger right now is we're looking at some snow, but more ice now, and
yeah,
that's never good.
No. That's not fun.
Whew. Okay, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. Can't wait. So at 2:30 p.m., you've heard her on the show before, but a friend of mine, Melissa Melendez, is a former state legislator out in California. She lives just south of the fire zone, and we're going to talk to her at 2:30 to get an update because I felt like it was important to jump right on that topic. It is all the news right now, and rightfully so. Y'all, I can't begin to describe to you how apocalyptic this is. If you've not been following it, just know this. It is devastating. It is that we're seeing right as what is being called the worst fires perhaps in recorded history in a state that has fires on a regular basis. So all that, we're going to have an update with Melissa Melendez at 2:30 on live from California. And then at 3:30 p.m., you know the deal, it's Thursday. Butters and Lee will come on at Thursday at 3:30 and every week. And so we're doing that at 3:30 today. Stand by for that one. And then a triple dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, keeping in mind that we have this thing going on in California, let's talk about some apocalyptic priorities. That's what I'm calling it, apocalyptic priorities. The kind of thing where liberals get hold of the agenda, and the agenda matters more than common sense. It certainly matters more than people. Apocalyptic priorities, well, they're skewed, but we'll talk about them. Number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, is this the last gasp of lawfare? Are we finally there? Are we seeing the last desperate gasps of lawfare? Maybe. Interesting things are happening with Merrick Garland. Interesting things are happening with Jack Smith. Interesting things are happening with Judge Merchan and Alvin Bragg. Even Fannie Willis. We'll talk about it. Is it the last gasp of lawfare? I hope so. Number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, lesson learned is what I'm calling it. Lesson learned. Did Facebook just get it handed to them? What just happened? Why are we watching all of a sudden a change in the way they're going to handle your quote-unquote information? Like, suddenly they're not going to grade you anymore. They're not going to deplatform you. They're not going to try to stymie free speech, allegedly. And that's interesting. I think it's part of the Musk effect, but we'll talk about it. Number three on the Triple Dipper, lessons learned. All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll remind you guys that every single day, the Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue, and I will tell you more about him momentarily. So yeah, I heard a report last night from California, and the reporter on the street talked about fire crews who have been slaving against the odds, with some of them going for 72 hours straight without stopping. Can you imagine? 3 days without a break as they work and slave and haul hose lines and rescue trapped residents. 72 straight hours, and yet the fires are still at zero containment in some areas, with more of them springing up even as we speak. I'm telling you, these are heroes, by God. They are. So what exactly is a hero? Think about it. What exactly is a hero? It's not a rhetorical question. I suspect that when most people get asked that question, they have two reactions. One is they picture the word definition of hero, like the dictionary definition. But I would also dare say that most folks when you say, what is a hero, they conjure up an image in their mind, like an image of a person or a character, whether real or fictional, that creates the image that they see in their mind's eye of a hero by way of a mental picture. So yeah, hero by definition, it actually means a person who is admired or idealized for courage, for outstanding achievements, for noble qualities. Often there's someone who rises to an occasion, the right words, the right actions, the right time, for the right reasons, in such a way that makes a difference in the lives of others. Often those words and actions are committed in some selfless kind of manner, with the hero feeling the possibility of backlash or dishonor or even death or injury to himself. Okay, so there's the textbook definition, but how about the imagery? Like, what do you picture? Is there an image that sticks with you? And if so, is it someone straight out of Central Casting? I mean, you know what I mean. Tall, handsome, debonair, good hair, sharp as a tack, smooth with words. Can't take him in a fight, for real. Is that what you picture? Well, that kind of imagery is understandable, but if you get right down to it, heroes often seem to defy that kind of stereotype. I mean, to be sure, there are those who look like recruiting posters, like Pat Tillman. He was a former NFL football star, became an Army Ranger. Ronald Reagan, he was a dashing cowboy movie star, became the president of the United States. But I've also seen just the opposite. I remember this one big old dude in Iraq who looked like the epitome of a dangerous guy who was the first one to hide behind other people in a firefight. He didn't stay on the team much longer either, just saying. Years ago, when I was a young lieutenant, though, in training at Fort Benning, I had a good friend. He was a good friend for just a matter of months as we went through the infantry officer basic course together. But the guy left a lifelong impression on me. His name was Bosco Masukwa, and he was an officer from Malawi, Africa. He wasn't more than about 5'5", couldn't have weighed more than 90 pounds, had a face that always looked like he was smiling even when he wasn't. He looked like a good wind might blow him down, but I saw that guy do more than most guys who were twice his size. Once on a ruck march, I looked over in the dark of night and realized he was carrying the team gear for himself and three other guys without complaining about it. They just kept dumping stuff on him, and instead of complaining, he just took it and carried the equivalent of his body weight for miles until I saw what was happening and made it stop. He was a rock. He never quit. But if you looked at him, he was not the kind of guy you would have pictured doing that kind of thing. I also remember this scrappy little kid that I've known since he was just a nubbin, just a little guy. He was 90 pounds soaking wet, not the top in his class in high school, didn't go off to an Ivy League school. He is now a chief in the Navy SEALs with 20 years of service and multiple combat tours. You see, I believe that most heroes are just ordinary Joes and Janes who stood up when they were needed, and they come in all shapes and sizes, every race and creed. They are not defined by any educational status. They are often considered the least among them, but they generally always have a grit and a character and a heart that sets them apart. If you look at Scripture, you'll find over and over again that God is notorious for choosing the least among us to serve as heroes. David's family, King David, they didn't think for a second that he was the one that Samuel was trying to anoint as a king. They left him out in the field tending the flocks. They had to go get him. But he was God's chosen, and he later slayed the giant Goliath, and he was mighty in battle. Gideon, he was hiding in a wine press trying to avoid the enemy when he was called to leadership. Esther, she was a Jewish woman with no real voice in the king's court until she was told to speak for such a time as this, and she did so at risk of her own life. Even Jesus, if you get down to him, was a surprise to those who were looking, really looking, for the Messiah. They would say, what good thing can come from Nazareth? Well, even if you don't believe that he was who he said he was, which I do, the fact remains his very existence, which is documented outside the Bible as having been real, changed the whole world. So why am I saying all this? Well, because right now we're watching on the world stage as this very thing, this idea that heroes come from unexpected places, plays out. We're also, though, and this is the problem, we're watching what happens when a leader is reckless or when a leader is feckless. Reckless leadership and feckless leadership. One of them makes decisions without regard for the outcome. The other can't make decisions because of fear of the outcome. And the apocalypse that we're seeing right now in California are giving us ample evidence of both. There are heroes in the midst of the fire, but some of the leaders that we're seeing, these so-called leaders, are reckless and feckless. Let's break them down for a minute. How about reckless? Reckless leadership puts agendas over people. Reckless leadership sees resources as tools for their own desires as opposed to being for the greater good. Reckless leadership looks at norms and sees those as being trivial, inconsequential, even frivolous, and is willing to take something meant for one thing and use it for another in order to get what they want for their personal agendas. Classic example, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. Mayor Bass knew that the firemen fight fires, right? She knew that safety and good order are one of the primary functions of government. She knew it. But her reckless leadership thought it was better to use the city of Los Angeles' amazing fire department as a social experiment. So she cut fire department's budget by over $17 million and redesignated many of those funds to the homeless. Mayor Bass also recklessly invoked the need for diversity, equity, and inclusion in the hiring of personnel and proudly announced another glass ceiling when she tapped the city's first LGBTQ woman to lead the LA Fire Department. Because, you know, everyone knows when your house is burning or your life's at risk, you absolutely need to know what skin color or sexual orientation your rescuer has. Well, then add to it all that the reservoirs that feed the fire hydrants were not topped off because Mayor Bass had not ordered their levels checked and refilled prior to a fire season that comes every year. All of this despite the fact that Mayor Bass has a long history of wind-driven fires every year as history to draw from, but she recklessly made decisions that are now fueling the damage caused by massive out-of-control fires that are sweeping Los Angeles. That's reckless. How about this? What's an example of feckless? Well, feckless leadership looks silly and nervous when what is needed is confidence. Feckless leadership cracks jokes at the wrong time, waffles on decision-making, gets mad when somebody doesn't agree. Joe Biden takes the prize for that one. His apologists and his spin doctors will tell you that he's on the winning side of every argument, but the whole world sees what is happening, and they just shake their heads in disbelief. The great city on a hill, America, waffles and wavers in front of other nations who do not have our own best interests in mind. But among all the many instances of Joe Biden's fecklessness, and there have been many, perhaps some of the most galling examples came just in the past few days. As he first went to New Orleans to attend a memorial for the fallen in the terror incidents of New Year's Eve, and he doddered, and then he fell asleep during the ceremony. I mean, really. And then out to California, where he listened to the reports of destruction and people losing their lives and losing property. And after Air Force One shut down the airspace for over an hour, and after hearing the reports and seeing the faces and looking lost as a coot, Joe turned to the press and goes, "But hey, there's some good news. I became a great-grandfather today." Tepid laughs, confused clapping. I mean, what? People are dying and losing everything, and billions will have to be spent to rebuild California, but the president is so uncomfortable with the gravity of the moment that in his fecklessness, he felt the need to lighten the mood by making it all about him and his family. That, my friends, is the epitome of fecklessness. Look, reckless leaders get people killed, and feckless leaders cause more loss from waffling and wavering. But heroes come in all sizes. Never underestimate them. They're really more often than not just normal folks who do abnormal things. Things that may surprise even themselves. I mean, don't count out the little guy, right? We need heroes, and we need them every day. And we need them for such a time as this. Reckless and feckless winds up being respectless, if you catch my meaning. But the little guy who says, "Not on my watch," the firefighter who spends 72 hours straight trying to put out the flames, that's the salt of the earth. And we need more of them. Bring us more of them, Lord. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, there you have it. Reckless and feckless. You just don't want that in your leadership. And right now, in the midst of what we're seeing with the fires, the elected leadership is both reckless and feckless. It's the boots on the ground that are doing the job, and we pray for them. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, we'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, plenty more where that came from. Hey, but listen, before I go any further, I always tell you guys, so Stan McDonald is the attorney who sponsors the Right Side Way opening monologue. So attorney Stan McDonald, I mean, he's a partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, a great firm out of Huntsville. He's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama. And listen, not only is Stan going to be somebody who advocates for your legal needs and your rights, but he has been an absolute warrior on causes and things that the Right Side Ruffian community really cares about. I know for a fact because I know him personally. Look, attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions over the years. He knows how to represent you in every version of court, whether it be local, state, or federal. And when Stan McDonald's on your side, like I always say, you have no greater friend and your adversaries have no greater foe. So, attorney Stan McDonald, I'm going to tell you how to reach him. You ready? Attorney Stan McDonald of the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. He's an America First family man, and here's the deal. You can call him at this number, 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. And do me a favor, tell him you heard about it on Right Side Radio. And here's this ridiculous disclaimer. You ready? No representation made the quality legal service before was greater than quality legal service before the other lawyers. Dun dun! Bum bum bum!
And sound effects included.
Sound effects included. Now I'm doing my own sound effects. There's not even a button for that. That was just me. All right. Hey, listen, text message. The text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. Jeffro from Indiana texted in, by the way. He is back on the road today, and he's even going through Nashville. He says trouble is he's going in the wrong direction. Oh, my gosh. Jeff is late, dude. You did not need to be driving back in the midnight time frame on this weather.
Nope.
So, all right, Jeff, make a path, man.
Step on it.
David from Bucky's already checking in. Send us a what did he send you? Oh, he wants. It's no longer the Gulf of Mexico. It's not even the Gulf of America. It's the Gulf of Bucky's.
That's great.
Cameron from Decatur says, you ought to play some bumper music by Paul Overstreet. Okay. Especially his song, Heroes. Interesting. John from Huntsville. Phil, fantastic monologue. Also, did you watch any of Jimmy Carter's funeral? I'm still sticking with my half inch of snow prediction for Huntsville. Half inch.
I think the latest prediction from my meteorologist brother was 2 to 4.
Two to four for the Huntsville area.
Yes, Huntsville area.
All right, so Gadsden, they're downgrading Gadsden to like 2+ ice.
2+ ice.
Yeah, 2+ ice. And then Robert from Athens says, dear Colonel Phil, I sadly remind everyone that the people of Los Angeles, state of California, voted for this leadership. They could have chosen better, but they voted for the same fate as Sodom and Gomorrah. Ooh, boy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, live update from California from State Senator Melissa Melendez. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground, northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about Alabama. I love it. Y'all, this show goes like from the top of Huntsville down to Birmingham, from Tuscaloosa back to Gadsden. And oh, by the way, coming up next week, live on the air in Chattanooga, Tennessee, about to be a regional show. So we're looking forward to that. I'll tell you what, I talk about where I live and the regions that I live in and how much I appreciate being here. I never take it for granted. But, you know, some of y'all who've heard my testimony, me talking about my own personal story, you know that I've had a chance to live other places. Well, one of the places that I just have incredible memories of is living for several years in California. I lived in Orange County in an area named Laguna, and that's not too far from the fire zone. In fact, it was just a couple of years ago that parts of my old neighborhood actually burned up in another fire in Laguna. That being said, California is an amazing state with so much to offer that is so bound up in politics that we can't fathom, but yet the people and the places and the resources of California are unparalleled in many ways. Well, a friend of mine is someone who served in the state Senate there in California, Melissa Melendez. She's a former state senator. She also did quite a bit of work on her own city council. I mean, she was on the Lake Elsinore City Council. She's also a Navy vet. And she's on the phone right now to give us a live update. Hey, Melissa Melendez, how are you doing?
Hey, Phil, I'm good. We're hanging in there out here in California, but, you know, everything's on fire right now, so we're just...
It's amazing to watch and listen.
People.
Just know that from afar, we are prayerful and hoping the best for y'all. I mean, this is just a tragedy unfolding right now.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, even though where I live, I'm, you know, about 70 miles from where the fires are, what we're experiencing in our area, of course, is the utility companies turning everybody's power off. You know, they don't want anything sparking from one of their utility lines, one of their transmission lines, so they turn everyone's power off. So we've got an awful lot of people in LA who are wondering where the leadership is in California. As I saw Gavin Newsom, our illustrious governor, posted a something like a commercial on X last night, kind of giving himself a pat on the back. And we're all wondering why he's doing that, why he's using taxpayer money to make a commercial, first of all. But, you know, people don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. Their homes are burning down. And we've got our governor who's making fluff pieces to prop himself up. So pretty frustrating.
Well, it is. It's frustrating. And I tell you what, the last 2 days, and I just did my opening monologue right before you called. We got you on the phone, and that was geared towards what I call the reckless and or feckless leadership that we're seeing in all of this. And I don't want to spend so much of our time. First of all, I'd like to know, what do you know about the damages? Because everything we're seeing in terms of the life, limb, and property issues is on a scale that's even beyond the norm. I mean, you guys are not, fires are not abnormal. I mean, you have the fire season every year, but nothing like what we've seen, especially in the Palisades area.
Yeah, and the Santa Ana winds that are currently blowing, they are, from what I'm told, the strongest they've been in 14 years.
Wow.
That doesn't help.
No.
And they are, I mean, it is very strong wind out there. So, of course, that certainly doesn't help when these fires start. We've got over 1,000 structures have burned to the ground. We have five, well, actually, it might be a few more now, but five, the last I heard, people dead. We have firefighters who are injured. And it's, you know, there's no containment of these fires. Now, add to that, we've seen video footage of people starting fires during all of this.
Oh, really?
I mean, it boggles your mind. So we have probably right now five or six pretty significant fires burning the Palisades, and the Eaton Fire, of course, are the largest right now. But we have, you know, we've got our own water issues where they're not able to get these tanks filled up fast enough and replenish them so that there's water in the line when the firefighters need it. I mean, I saw a video of a firefighter who was filling up a traffic cone with water from a puddle to go over and put out a flame that started in one of the houses. I mean, that's the point we're at right now. And it's not that we don't have water. Our reservoirs have water, but we certainly need more reservoirs. We haven't been able to get those built because, you know, the environmental groups out there fight us at every turn. So California voters back in 2014 said, okay, state of California, we will give you more of our money so that you can build at least two more reservoirs, a Sites Reservoir and a Temperance Flats Reservoir. And that was in 2014. Those reservoirs still have not been built.
Oh,
it is 2025.
Wow. I
it's
know
it's a lack of leadership.
I did a thing on this yesterday about the environmental laws that get in the way. But then when you hear somebody, I mean, like you just named the actual reservoirs. You were in the state senate. You probably dealt with some of this to some degree. And I look at this and think that's just asinine. That nothing takes that long. I mean, you could rebuild, you know, half of New York City in the time it takes just to get the environmental studies done to build a reservoir in California.
Well, I mean, the Hoover Dam was built in 5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, how hard can it be to build a few reservoirs? I mean, it is a lack of leadership. I mean, I think about the times when I was in the legislature where Democrats passed bills to allow environmental waivers for athletic teams to build a new stadium or build a new arena. But we can't get the same kind of waivers to get these reservoirs built. I mean, what's wrong with that picture? I guess if, you know, you're a zillionaire and you own a sports team in California, you can get things done. So,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe the citizens of California should pool their money and buy a team, and then we might have a little bit of, you know, edge over the other guys out there. But this is, you know, you can't predict Mother Nature. You can't control Mother Nature, but we can certainly control how well we are prepared to deal with, you know, the havoc that Mother Nature wrecks. And right now, we have utility companies that aren't maintaining their lines.
Right.
We have reservoirs that aren't being built. It's a mess. And Gavin Newsom, you know, you just can't say, well, it's climate change or, you know, whatever excuse he might come up with. I think the time has run out for him to blame those sorts of things. And he's got to look in the mirror and say, okay, I've failed the people of California, and we need to fix this.
I don't know if his pridefulness will ever allow him to say something like that, but
no.
So no. I mean, that would just mess up his hair.
No. We can never take responsibility. I mean, he was even, they showed video, thing was on CNN, where Anderson Cooper was asking him about the fact that, you know, the fire hydrants were empty. The firefighters left because there was no water. And his response to that was, well, the locals, that's something they're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, I saw that. That was
no,
amazing.
That's not, you can't just shrug it off and say, well, something bad has happened. Not my problem, but whenever something good happens, he wants to take all of the credit. I mean, this lies squarely on his shoulders, not to mention the shoulders of Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles.
Yes, absolutely.
Who cut the budget to the fire department.
I've got an article right here from Fox Business, actually, that says that, and I did not know this till this morning, the budget for the homeless situation in L.A. is $1.3 billion in her current budget, but the L.A. Fire Department is $837 million. So basically,
exactly.
She's putting almost twice the amount into homelessness as she is into firefighting.
Exactly. I mean, it's not that homelessness isn't a priority, particularly in Los Angeles, but, you know, people's lives, I think, should have a pretty high priority on her list as well. And she wants, I mean, she said she wanted to cut even more. I'm sure she'll probably try to walk that back now. But the fact is, she cut money from the budget. And then we have the Biden administration that put a halt to prescribed burns in California on federal lands. Well, those prescribed burns, actually, those are fire prevention techniques. You know, you do those so that you can stave off some of these wildfires and their enormous spread. And Gavin Newsom fully supported that. And even he put a halt to some of the prescribed burns. And when people talk about, I mean, I know President Trump had mentioned it and several others, but when you talk about maintaining our forest and getting rid of the underbrush and making sure homes are hardened, that's what we're talking about, making sure that can get done. And instead, the environmentalists say, no, you can't do that.
Well, the politicians then kowtow to the environmentalists, which is the real problem, because environmentalists don't make the laws. They just influence the laws. But let me ask you this. Speaking of Gavin Newsom, I got two other questions I want to hit with you. One of them is, Trump has been saying that Gavin Newsom has diverted waters from the northern side of the state to the sea in order to benefit the fish population, as opposed to filling reservoirs to the south with the money that the water that would otherwise flow south. What do you know about that? Is there any validity to that? Is he literally diverting waters away on environmental grounds?
That is absolutely true. You know, Gavin Newsom made a big deal about him shutting down and removing four different dams up in the Klamath River. Well, you know, when you dam the water, that allows you to redirect it and store it, and so you have it in times of emergency. He got rid of those dams because of saving, you know, for the purposes of saving salmon, which the, you know, the tribal alliances wanted, and I understand that, but is there a way that we can do that where we're not putting people's lives in jeopardy? And there was a plan that was, you know, put together, and there's a couple of different names for it. One of them is like the Delta Conveyance Plan, and that's what Trump was talking about when he mentioned that, you know, there was a plan put in place to make sure that the water could flow from the north to the south and wherever it needed to be. And Gavin Newsom didn't want any part of that. So that's on him as well. I mean, California has water, okay?
Yeah.
It's just how we use it that has become the problem.
Well, so, I mean, it's maddening, but let me ask a question before I run out of time. You guys do have political recall laws out there. Is there enough, let me back up. The people of California are the ones who elected Karen Bass and the ones who elected Gavin Newsom, and I recognize that y'all turned like 10 counties red in the last election, the presidential cycle. It's not like this is an entirely liberal state. There's a lot of conservatives like you in California. But those population centers that tend to control the politics are the ones that keep putting people like Newsom and Bass in office. Is there any possibility that they can see a recall of Karen Bass, much like you saw with George Gascon most recently?
Well, that is entirely possible. I mean, and she certainly better be paying attention, because while she was off in Ghana having a good time there, her city was burning. Her city was in flames. And she came back, and then the reporter tried to ask her about it, and she just stood there, you know, just dumbfounded that he would ask the question and said nothing. She has a lot to answer for, and she darn well, you know, may get recalled because, again, there's over 1,000 structures that have burned. People have lost their lives. People, and I'll tell you something else. I mean, Los Angeles is very, very deep blue. But, you know, Adam Carolla was, I saw a video he posted about, because he had to evacuate too. And he made a very good point. He said, you know, when these folks, when these deep blue voters from Los Angeles whose homes burned down along the coast, when they go and try to rebuild and the Coastal Commission tells them, no, I don't think so, then you might see a change how they vote, because that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The Coastal Commission would prefer nothing is built on the coast ever.
Yeah, God, you know, how do you thought about that? If they're not grandfathered in, or if they have some kind of a rebuild law that that prohibits the without having the major environmental impact studies done and all of it, and maybe even just saying you can't rebuild. The Pacific Coast Highway is scorched from what I saw.
It is.
It's just. I even saw fires were on Set Boulevard. I mean, this is just unbelievable.
It's all over. I mean, Pacific Palisades is, you know, practically gone now.
Yeah. Well, listen, my friend, I'm glad that you're in a safe place. That was one of the first things I thought of, was to text someone I knew, being you. I want to stay in touch on this, because I have a feeling this is going to be a long weekend. You guys are amazing out there in Alabama. We're praying for California, just so you know.
Well, I sure appreciate that. We all do. We could definitely use a lot of prayers, and I'll certainly keep you posted. I do think, though, we're in for several more days, if not weeks, of trying to get these fires out. So thank you for your prayers.
All right. Melissa Melendez, former state senator in California, giving us a live update. We appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a crying shame. And I ran all the way to the end of my time here just to make sure I got time with her. But, I mean, she's super sharp. She's got her MBA. She also was a Russian linguist in the Navy, and she served in the state legislature. If anybody knows what's going on, she does. And she's telling us everything we're hearing is exactly what's happening. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, I got just a little bit of time here, so let me go straight to the phones. He held on during the break, so let me honor his time. Clay from Madison. Hey, Clay, how you doing?
Hey, Dr. Ruffian, Professor of Right. Been a while. How you doing today?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Hey, water in Los Angeles. I don't think many people realize that Los Angeles has never had enough water since the 1930s. Mm. In the mid-1930s, they built Parker Dam on the Colorado River, and they formed Lake Havasu.
Yeah.
Now, from Lake Havasu, there are aqueducts that pull water out and channel it all the way across Southern California to Los Angeles. It's a Colorado River Basin Water Project. You can actually follow it on a map if you use, you know, the mapping programs, and you can follow that. So what I'm saying is that since the 1930s, Los Angeles has never had enough water. Now, you've seen Lake Powell draw down and have the big bathtub ring.
Yeah.
Lake Havasu is mandated to stay at certain levels so that it doesn't go below the intake of those aqueducts that feed Los Angeles.
Well, it's a classic example of people choose to live somewhere where people weren't meant to live in that amount, so we restructure the world to sort of fit our needs. But they could still do a better job than what they're doing right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, they're already borrowing from the Colorado River. They need to manage, and the explosive growth, they need to manage what they've got even better, which they haven't done.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know?
Yeah, it's
and in the 70s or early 80s or something, Phoenix did the same thing. They built aqueducts on the other side of Lake Havasu and pulled water into Phoenix.
Well,
it's just liberalism at its worst.
Yeah, it absolutely is, man. Clay, thanks for the call. Appreciate you. That was good insight.
Thank you, sir.
See you, bud. Yeah, he's right. I mean, when you look at the level of mismanagement right now, it is on like an epic scale. It is grand in its scope. For instance, one of the things that's really galling a lot of people right now is that the L.A. mayor just recently slashed the budget by $17.5 million for the fire department. Now, they have an $837 million budget total. You think, okay, I mean, how big? This is still a big cut. That's still a very big cut. And it has an impact. But then you add to that other things that have happened in California, like a number of firefighters that were let go because of COVID vaccine mandates and things like that. And then you add to that, here's another one for you. This is going to blow your mind. The Federalist has an article today that says that Los Angeles County recently shipped off excess firefighting equipment to Ukraine. Why? It's not like they don't have Santa Ana winds every single year. Now, I guess if it was excess or it was no longer in use, or maybe it was like surplusage because it was, you know, out of date or whatever else, I guess. Right now, we're having it right now. The reports are from the Federalist that the fire department donated surplus supplies to help a foreign regime and is now caught flat-footed without the capacity to respond to the Pacific Palisades fire and other fires. And it just blows my mind what we're seeing out there. A little more on this when we get back, and we'll wrap it up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on a Turbo Thursday. We're going to get you turboed all the way to Friday, quick as we can. It is hour number two, and we're still talking about what's happening with the apocalyptic priorities out in California. And I'll go to the phones here in just a minute, but I got to tell you, one of the things that really just gets me is how much the leadership of Karen Bass has been just absolutely I mean, it was a big, big deal to appoint the very first ever LGBTQ woman to be the fire chief of Los Angeles. And you look at it and go, does anybody care? They just want to know that someone who knows what they're doing is going to oversee the rescuing of lives and the saving of property. That this whole, you got a DEI everything. Well, we're going to make sure we're more inclusive. We have a more diverse workforce. How about they're just good at fighting fires? That's all we care about. Really, that's all we care about. But then on top of that, she cuts the budget. And then, oh, by the way, is proud to have shipped off a bunch of surplus firefighting equipment to Ukraine. Well, that makes good sense. The LA Times, by the way, came out and just excoriated her in the last few days. Fox News, Dateline, yesterday, actually. LA Times owner, Dr. Pat Soon-Shiong, reminded followers, quote, how competence matters when it comes to Mayor Karen Bass. I'm telling you, if they don't do a recall vote on her, I don't know who can be recalled. Says Bass has been heavily criticized out of the country in Africa when the fires broke out. It took forever to get back to California. Her former opponent, a guy named Rick Caruso, who's ran against her for mayor in 22, he's the one who pointed out first that there was no water in the fire hydrants. And it was because you have a leadership issue with things like filling the reservoirs. Hey, let me go to the phones real quick. Jeff Rowe from Indiana is back. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, except I'm going the wrong direction.
Yeah, dude, you're running late. What the heck?
Oh, when everything froze 9 degrees and we have freezing fog, you know, it's kind of hard to get started in the morning.
Freezing fog. Now, that's one we don't see down here very often. Fog's actually freezing in the air, huh?
Oh, yeah. It clings to everything just like fog would, you know, and it was 9 degrees this morning when I got up. So, yeah, it kind of makes things icy a little bit.
Oy. Oh, well, okay. So you're coming down. You still got to go back up. And, you know, the weather hits tonight. So, and where are you right now?
I'm just about 22 miles from the border, going south in Tennessee here.
Whew. Well, I hope they got a load waiting on you when you pull in the yard, man.
Oh, I do too. You got a warm bed for me tomorrow night if I come down? Because I have no doubt that I will be stuck down here.
Holler at me. Wow, that's just a mess. Well, listen, what do you think about all your stuff?
You know, I'm stunned because I've got a bleeding heart for so many things, you know, and everything, but try as I might, I don't feel sorry for them at all.
Right.
Because they basically, I liken it to the voters of California, the crazy Democrats, where I call it, it's not the Democrats, it's the Darwins. It's the Darwin Party, I believe, because they keep going, they're going Darwin themselves out of existence, I'm afraid. But I liken them to a Islamic terrorist bomber, suicide bomber, because their ideology is like, we have to do this, we have to do this, and I don't care what happens to me, but I'm going to take out as many good people around me that that don't agree with me as I can.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what they're doing.
Well, it does. And I look at it and think, there's no way in the world you could say, I didn't know we had fires out here. I didn't know the Santa Ana winds came in every year at the same time. I didn't know that fire hydrants had to have water, which meant the reservoirs had to be topped off. I didn't know we needed fire equipment. They can't say any of that. All they can say is, well, climate change is making things worse. And that's just, to me, the most asinine thing I've ever heard. Because even if it's climate change making things worse, that means you still got to have water to put the fire out.
Yeah. I mean, if the government was run as a corporation, I think it would be our fiduciary duty to take over and kick the board of directors and the CEO out of office, because they're basically killing the people around them, and they're squandering our money. I wish we was run that way so we could, you know, dumb people shouldn't vote. You know, everybody has a right to vote, but if you're that dumb, please stay away from the voting booth, because you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, no doubt, man. It's you know, we'll wait and watch. I hope that California surprised us here most recently. They had major number of counties, that 10 of them, I believe, that flipped red for the first time. They had a higher turnout for Trump than was expected. And then they've also, like, they had the George Gascon. They just got sick of him and actually stood up and said something about it. And I can't help but look at this and think, okay, some of the elites have just had their homes burned down. We may see an uprising here that has some funding to it, if you know what I mean.
And sadly enough, that's what has to happen. It's like, you know, it's like the crime and stuff, is it?
Yeah.
Until it happens to them personally, they don't understand it, but hopefully they get a clue now.
Yeah, hopefully they do. All right, man, you be safe on the road, and we'll talk to you tomorrow either from your Lazy Boy chair or from your truck, either one.
Or in your house, who knows? I might even be there. you might have to take the Gladiator out and come pick me up.
you might be spending the night at Bucky's, who knows?
You never know.
That's right.
Have a good one.
Take care, buddy. Wow. Hey, listen, as we wrap this segment up and I move on to other things, I got to tell you, if you have not seen it, the interview that was last night, actually did a couple of them. He had one on CNN that got very emotional, and then he had one on Fox, which was still really solid and but not as tearful, if you know what I'm saying. But James Woods, the actor, Academy Award nominee, very conservative. I mean, what we've begun to see more and more of late is movie stars who are willing to speak out, which has been interesting. I mean, you've had it's still a minority. By the way, what I imagine is there's quite a few of them that just choose to stay quiet, which is fine, because on the one hand, I just want to go watch their movies. I don't care about their politics. I mean, some of them I look at and go, I mean, how disappointing was it to see in the last presidential cycle when almost every member of the Avengers from the Marvel group all did a big joint commercial for Kamala? Tell you who wasn't there was Chris Pratt. He was not there. You know why? Yeah, Chris Pratt was not there and a couple others. But what we're looking at right now is people like James Woods and John Voight and others finally speaking out. Well, James Woods lost his house. So did Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal's lived in the same house for 46 years with his wife, who he's been married to that long. And there are members of what I would call the Hollywood elite that are feeling this as much as anybody else. And I can't help but wonder if that is going to finally move things in terms of the politics, at least of this issue. At least of this issue. But the interview with James Woods on CNN, he got very emotional as he talked about the fact that his little niece, I think it was, tried to offer him, his 8-year-old niece offered him her piggy bank to help rebuild his house. Just got all over him, and he couldn't talk for a minute. But what we're seeing out there right now is truly devastation, and it's horrible to look at. Pacific Palisades, which is a beautiful area, is gone. I mean, the majority of it is just actually gone. it looks like a nuclear bomb went off. The neighborhood is just streets with ash. And if you haven't seen the pictures of the burning from the sky, it is scary to look at, because a massive portion of Los Angeles County is just burning red in the nighttime photographs taken from the air. And I mentioned before that I used to live in an area called Laguna Niguel, where I live. Laguna Beach is a beautiful area. Up in the hills above it is where I lived, in Laguna Niguel. My backyard was a canyon. I mean, it was just really just a gorgeous area. It was just a couple of years ago, the Laguna fire scorched. I think 20 houses were just gone before they could get it under control. And what I'm saying is, it's gorgeous, beautiful, populated area. We're not even, this is not like the, you know, Smokey the Bear, don't leave your cigarette in the woods out there in the national park. This is not that. This is Pasadena. This is Hollywood. There's a fire that broke out next to the Hollywood sign up on the hill. There's a mountain where a lot of communications towers are at right now that is burning as we speak. There's, you know, Pasadena, like I said a minute ago, Sunset Boulevard was on fire. This is heavily populated residential and business areas that are just gone. The cost of rebuilding is going to be epic. And the problem that I think also have with this from outside of California looking in is they're going to ask for a federal disaster declaration, and they're going to ask for taxpayer dollars that everybody in the nation chipped in. And then we're going to work to rebuild, but are they going to keep the same policies? So one of the things that I am hearing is going to happen is that Trump is going to issue a disaster declaration for them as soon as he takes office, but that he's going to condition parts of it to changing their policies and getting back to slowing the spread of wildfire by doing the pre-work, the clear-cutting, the unnatural things that have to be done to preserve the natural. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I hope it does. But that's where we are.
Well, not too long ago, Trump was on Joe Rogan talking about how California needs to put some more effort in and cleaning up the forests and prevent wildfire like this. And he was made fun of by the left. What do you know about stopping a wildfire? Yeah. You conspiracy
theorist.
How
you like him now?
Yeah. And so it's, you know, looking back on stuff like that, it's funny, but it's not funny. You know, it's ironic, yeah, but it's like people are dying because of the incompetence.
That's exactly right. All right, take me to a break there, JP. We'll take a break, come right back, and get a bunch of text messages. Y'all are stacking them up on me. I got to catch up, man. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just giving you all the truth you can slap on a bumper sticker. Got a bunch of text messages. I mean, a bunch. And by the way, don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour after the next break, we have Thursday afternoon Butters and Lee coming up. So stand by for that. Allie from Athens has texted in. She said, Phil, when you choose to worship the creation more than the creator, you enslave yourself to idolatry. When you're enslaved to idolatry, it ends up being against your religion to put all people's safety over the safety of the salmon runs. Yeah. So Californians don't know that they are in a spiritual battle for their temporal and eternal lives, and we need to do spiritual warfare on their behalf. Allie, what a great text. Thank you. And you are so correct. Brian from Huntsville says, very serious. The people that voted for Mayor Bass and multiple California politicians are to blame for the ensuing inferno. I do not disagree, or at least the inability to mitigate it. How about that?
By the way, we had a comment on our Twitter stream earlier. Auburn Joe, he commented that fire hydrants with no water, but hey, the fish in Northern California have plenty, and the seals weren't disturbed.
Nice. The Navy SEALs or the other SEALs?
Yeah. Probably the other SEALs, yeah.
Navy SEALs are in San Diego, so stand
that's
by.
That's true.
Devin from Brownsboro says, hey, Phil, longtime Right Side Ruffian here. Glad of it. He said, I got to tell you, I'm as conservative as it comes. However, I find it extremely upsetting looking at some of these social media sites and seeing these conservatives posting things like California's finally getting what it deserves. As a human being, my thoughts and prayers are with the families affected and those still in danger, politics aside. Well, you got it right, Devin. You are absolutely right. That nobody should be saying something as asinine as, like for instance, the lady who James Woods' house burned down, and she said James Woods is getting karma. I mean, that's just, there's nothing in there. There's no decorum in that. There's no maturity in that. So, yeah.
You can do both of, you know, saying that there's good people in L.A. and praying for everybody there that's suffering, but then also at the same time pointing out the incompetence that caused it. You can do both, and then it drives me nuts. People are like, I hope L.A. just gets burnt to the ground. I'm like,
No.
I don't. I want to save L.A. from the politicians, you know. If there's no L.A., there's no L.A. We lost, you know, a great city.
In fact, I look at the whole state, and I think I've lived out there. I've visited out there, and I want our California back. Yeah. I want the California. I want the land of Reagan back.
You can't save L.A. if it's burnt to the ground.
That's exactly right. Dana from Athens says, California seems to have way too many infrastructure issues for this to be a coincidence for those that believe in those things. Yeah, there's some truth to that. Part of it is PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, is the monopoly that controls the utilities out there, and they have a stranglehold on the politics, and they resist the ability to, or resist the need to update their infrastructure. In fact, PG&E had to plead guilty. I said this yesterday, if you didn't hear it. PG&E, the company, had to plead guilty to 84 counts of manslaughter, I think in the year 2021, I think. I've never heard of a company pleading guilty to manslaughter. But what they did was they were basically liable because they had towers that were sparking forest fires. Those towers were 100 years old, and they hadn't been replaced. That's just unreal. So, yeah, PG&E, you got some issues. JD from Hartsel says, you tell Jeffro I live a quarter mile from the fried fish station in Falkenville, and if he gets stuck, he's got a place. JD, you go, man. Appreciate that very much. Jeffro, if you're listening, there you are. Although Charlene and I'd be proud to have you too. Although I think we're way off your beaten path. Dan, the man from Huntsville, says, so after President Trump gets LA truly built back better, perhaps the libs will see it's actually we the people, not us against them. We would love to know the people building it back proudly show off their MAGA stickers. Yes. Yes. Bucky says, our daughter lives in Ridgecrest, California. That's a beautiful area. Home of China Naval Air Station. On July 4th, 2019, a big 7.8 earthquake hit the area. Epicenter was 10 miles from the town. She's not worried about the fires as they are 175 miles away. Well, I'm glad she's in a safe place. And China Lake is an amazing spot. And thank you for her service, I assume, or her family service. Anyway, bottom line, David, glad she's well. Badger from Athens says, as for California, I hate to see anyone lose life, limb, or property, but old-fashioned farmers will tell you that sometimes a good slash and burn allows for a better future. It's true. That's why they do it. It's just, it's the idea that you can't do that. That's not natural. Neither is fire. Thank you very much.
I think the animals would prefer a slightly unnatural, quote, unnatural thing in the forest that would prevent the, you know, them getting killed and their homes getting destroyed.
Yes, I would agree. By the way, John, the Navy corpsman from Huntsville, just sent me the meme about the Gulf of Buc-ee's.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Gulf of America, not the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf of Buc-ee's. And what I did not notice the first time, he says, you forgot to mention it also contains Nugget Bay and the Jerky Channel.
The Jerky Channel.
The Jerky Channel. John from Coleman says, regarding congressional hearings, can a witness be forced to prove an investigation is actually ongoing? I don't know where we are right now. I guess you're talking about my third dipper that I haven't gotten to yet, but hang on. We'll get to that in a bit. Right now, the music's playing. Got to take a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern parts of beautiful state of Alabama. I'm talking about we go from the top side of Huntsville way on down to Birmingham, from Tuscaloosa back to Gadsden, and parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. And, oh, by the way, coming up Monday, live on WGOW out of Chattanooga as well. So we're looking forward to being a regional show. We appreciate all of you helping us with that that kind of momentum that only comes from having great Right Side Ruffian listeners like y'all. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. Monday, we go live in Chattanooga. So stand by, Tennessee. We are invading. All right, this is the segment we do with the whoop-whoop sound effect here momentarily. We're going to do a section of Butters and Lee where I have to just ask them some questions, get their input. They have opinions, and they're also a big part of the fabric of this show, but then they flip the script and ask me questions. So let me just call the roll, first of all, from the beautiful northern section of the listening area known as Huntsville, Lee from Huntsville. Are you on the line?
I'm present.
You are present. Thank you so much. And then also dialing in on the clean feed, talking to us through his computer right now, the Butterman. Butters, are you there?
I am, Phil. And could I take a quick second to make an apology to the Right Side Ruffians?
Certainly.
I just want to apologize. I was a little late in getting the newsletter out today. So for all you guys that have subscribed, we got a bunch of good stuff in there. Little late just after the show started today. Try to get that out so everybody can see what's coming up ahead. So, by the way, if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, go do it.
Well, make sure that you do the rest of Butters and Lee in the front leaning room while you do push-ups. How about that?
Yes, sir.
Roger that. No, we appreciate you. Hit me some Butters and Lee. Go for it. All right. Here's the deal. First question. This one's going to be just like heart and soul, I know, for Lee. So today, a federal judge in Kentucky issued a nationwide ban on the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite. And Tommy Tuberville is dropping a bill in to the Senate, the U.S. Senate, this week, called the Protection of Women's and Girls Sports Act. So with the demise of this legal side of the argument that transgender should be able to participate in women's sports, I got to ask you, are we seeing the Great Reset? Is common sense finally becoming common again? What are your thoughts? Start with you, Lee.
I mean, sure, I like the direction that it's going, but I hate to tell everybody, it's not like we've won and that's it, and we can all just, you know, wipe our brow and walk off. I just read in an article from AFT, which is American Federation of Teachers, how they were discouraged by those, by any changes that might happen, but finding hope in the fact that for now colleges and universities can craft their own policies around sex-based abuse and discrimination, regardless of who's in the White House.
Unbelievable.
That sentence right there tells you that this isn't over. It's not going to be over. They're going to keep coming because they look at this, and I'm glad Tommy Tuberville is doing what he's doing, but these changes to Title IX go far beyond sports.
Yeah, they absolutely do.
It touches areas that can get children expelled, removed from university over just accusations. It touches on, you know, on professors losing their job, even with tenure, because of perceived slights. I mean, it just goes way beyond sports. So I would say everybody needs to accept this as a win, a small win, but we haven't won the war.
Well, I would agree with that. And what's amazing is they attribute this to who's in the White House as being the main problem. They don't look at it as it was wrong and it was never going to stand up in court. It was a judge who made the decision that there was an overreach on the part of the Biden administration. All right. Well, all right. What do you think there, Butterman? Are we seeing, is it a great reset? Is it common sense becoming common again on this stuff?
So first off, common sense never went anywhere. I think common sense has always been here. I think the Right Side Ruffians and, you know, all the folks, it's always been there. I think what we finally have is we're getting to a place in society where we've had enough, the place to speak up. So I guess I'd say I'm encouraged. You know, I definitely wouldn't disagree with Lee, but I think we should also be encouraged that we're able to talk about this. I mean, look at Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, backpedaling, and I don't think Zucks is changing politically. I think he's changing because the majority of people are sick and tired of it. So at least be encouraged that now, you know, we can go talk about it without getting shouted down, and you know, so we're headed in a better direction.
What are you saying, Lee?
That wind will shift again. He just didn't want to go to jail.
Well, you know, but you make a great point. I love the thing you said there about common sense never really went away. But the winds of you know, the amazing thing is like to watch like when Black Lives Matter was just all the rage and they had to name streets after them and people were kneeling down in front of them and just madness. And that's kind of faded. And then the whole thing about transgenders, you know, participating in sports, and that's going to be okay. Everybody get on board, quick get on board. And then you quickly begin to realize that's fading too. But I think that Lee makes a point. These things can come back around. It's going to be a question of trying to solidify the positions, which you think you wouldn't have to solidify science, but there we are. Anyway, all right.
And I think ahead. I think we're going to see, you know, you've got a lot more parents, a lot more individuals, more emboldened. You look at what's going on with the volleyball teams, just saying, nope, we're just not going to participate.
Yeah.
And we're willing to do that. And we're willing to take it on the chin. So.
Absolutely. All right. Next question before we run out of time. We got about 5 minutes here. So California Burning, I just spent a good bit of time on this, just the first part of the show, had a guest on from California, talked about it some yesterday. So California is absolutely burning. Movie star homes are even gone. It's portions of Hollywood and Sunset Boulevard like that have been razed to the ground. Here's my question. Are the people of California, do you think, would you predict whether the people of California will or will not begin to demand a change in the liberal policies that made all this worse? You first this time, Butterman.
I think the only true way to really change people's mind is to change their wallet. Really affect their life. And I think that's getting ready to happen. They're dealing with these things now. Hopefully they're going to wake up to some extent. So I guess if there was a time to have hope that some of these people would realize how ridiculous it is, you know, they're about to find out when they start trying to pull permits and stuff to rebuild.
Yeah. You know, I would agree. Before I say too much about it, yeah, you make permits to build. You're saying that they may wind up finding out that the permits are harder to get.
That the government out that it's gotten too far out of hand.
Yeah, and what we're also going to find, I think, is that a lot of those they call them the fire codes now are much stronger. But there were houses that have been grandfathered in that were burned down. Will they be able to get replacement value off of their insurance? I don't know yet. Lee, what do you think? Are the people of California, even in the more liberal areas, going to push back now?
Maybe some, yeah. I do agree with the not just the permitting, but all the rules and regulations that are just that make building a house there take 3 years and 2 years instead of, you know, 4 or 5 months. But not just that, though. I think the inability to get insurance is going to be difficult for people there. Maybe the very wealthy can afford not to have insurance, but most people have to have insurance on their home. I think you're going to find it, you know, because actually I think James Woods had mentioned that, some of the people he knew there recently had lost their insurance. I think it was State Farm or somebody pulled out.
Allstate, I believe.
I think they're going to wake up, but they also need to wake up and understand that they're being sold a lie called climate change instead of the truth called they didn't manage their forest. They didn't do, fire breaks. They don't do a lot of things. And they just set this up to happen.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And it's a leadership issue as much as anything. What you got there, Butter?
I just think the vast majority of people don't really change. Don't really see things differently until it affects their actual lives, and I think this is gonna make a difference.
All right, well, so let me ask you this real quick before we go, because we got about 45 seconds to a minute. Is this gonna be? I mean, the fact that we've got what I would call some elites now who have had their houses burned down, is that gonna have put more gravitas in a pushback mode, or is it all the same? Are they just going to go climate change and be done with it? So the elites, how's that weigh in, Lee?
Well, many of them are too afraid to take an actual real stance. They're too afraid of, cancel culture in the sense of not just crowing the same thing about, climate change or whatever. I think maybe, yeah, you'll have more than before. Is it enough to make a difference? I doubt it.
What do you think, Butters?
I don't know. I don't know if they'll put two and two together. Something as big as the concepts of climate change and those issues. But I, okay, how long is it going to take for me to have a new house? Wait, what do you mean I can't have my pool back? Or what do you mean my pool is going to cost me $1.2 million when it cost me $200,000 to build it because the regulations were different?
Yeah.
I think some real practical stuff is going to happen real quick.
Yeah.
Or
what do you mean?
If it gets them to realizing the climate change issue, maybe.
Or what do you mean I can't build back on Pacific Coast Highway because now you've got an environmental study that has to take 3 years to get done and I may not even get the chance to build my house back? I mean, I think you're going to see stuff like that. It's going to be a level of jackassery we've never seen before, I think. All right, you guys, we're taking a break right now. That's round one of Butters and Lee. We come right back from this break, and this is where we flip the script, and they just ask me questions, and I wait to see how it goes because ain't no telling. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're right back with Butters and Lee. This is the part of the Butters and Lee segment where we flip the script and I wait to see what questions they have for me out of the blue. And it's hope that I've got an answer. Let's go ladies first. Lee, what do you have for moi?
Well, I'm wondering if you... I'm sure you did hear about British Parliament denying a national inquiry into the grooming gang situation there.
Oh, yeah.
The Muslim grooming gang, kind of based on the Rotherham child sexual exploitation scandal that they had there, which would be a town a little bit smaller than, say, Huntsville and Madison combined. That had 1,400 girls over a span of about 15 years.
Oh, my God.
From what would be like foster care homes, children's homes, you know, group homes, that were sought out, groomed, and repeatedly raped by men of Pakistani origin.
Ugh.
And they want to pretend that this isn't happening all over England. And what I want to ask you is denial. And it was like 300 and something to 100 and something. This wasn't close. What do you think that people... of Britain have to
take
their children?
Well, so first of all, some of those grooming gangs better be glad that that is a largely disarmed nation. Because I'm telling you right, vigilantism looks really good when you start thinking about stuff like this. But listen, what they're also, this is madness. And when it comes to kids, you err on the side of kids. And while I don't believe you should ever get back into like the, you know, the Duke lacrosse kind of thing where, you know, unsubstantiated made up allegations are then used to ruin people's lives. At the same time, this is not that. This is like you said, this is a large number of kids who have been abused repeatedly. And there is clear evidence that Keir Starmer, who is the prime minister, when he used to be basically what is their amounts to their attorney general, he literally just like poo-pooed this stuff, and he sent out a directive to the police forces around the nation to go light on the issue and to not try to track these things down. And that to me, if there's not going to be an effort to recall him, I don't know what is. But what the people should be doing is marching on the Houses of Parliament with pitchforks and torches right now and demanding not just answers, but demanding some satisfaction. So there, how about that?
And a hard drive check for Mr. Starmer.
Yeah, like, did you go to Epstein's Island and party with P. Diddy? We want to know. Just saying.
Exactly.
All right, I got about 4 minutes left. Butters, what you got for me?
So Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, God.
Pocahontas. She posted the defense secretary oversees an annual budget of nearly and a whole bunch of money and a bunch of people. This position is critically important to our national security, but Trump has put forward the most unqualified nominee in our history. So what exactly qualifies her to even determine who is qualified and unqualified to be the secretary of defense?
We're talking about a woman.
Where exactly of all of the previous highly qualified secretaries gotten us? Are we really where we should be?
Well, so first of all, take note that the incompetence of the Biden administration meant that you could fail in places like Afghanistan, fail on policies, fail to hit recruiting marks for four straight years, fail to do anything status and keep your job. Whereas Trump is famous for you're fired. So if you think for a second that Pete Hegseth can go in there and do a really bad job and then keep his job, you're just wrong. He'll be fired. He'll be asked to turn in his resignation in short order, if that were the case. But if you look, you know, what's really interesting, if you look at Pete Hegseth's record, let's set aside whether you want Trump to have his nominees or not, which I think he should. But in this particular case, I look at it and go, okay, he retired as a major. He's a combat veteran, two tours. He also did a tour in Gitmo. He was an infantry officer. And then, oh, by the way, he's got degrees from Princeton and I think, from Yale? and
Harvard.
In Harvard, yeah, okay, Harvard. And you can also easily go out and find these because he's been openly and with speaking the policies that he says he'll govern gets into the office. So I look at this and go, he's an open book. You had no idea what you'd get with Esper. You had no idea what you'd get with Austin. You had no idea what you get with anybody. Pete Hegseth is about as open a book as you could ever hope for. Also know that he has a boss that'll fire him in a heartbeat. So I say, you know, the woman who faked her way into a scholarship not being qualified is literally the black on anybody not being qualified for a job. How about that?
Yeah, it's just
she was a woman of color, don't you know?
she's got some color, I know that, but it ain't what she said it was.
So what exactly has qualified her besides managing to voting for her? It's just, and she's not the only one. It's lunacy.
It is, and she's the most pretentious individual in the world. Something about her too, just her schmarminess. Somebody just, I mean, needs to give her a timeout. I'm just saying. She needs some redirection.
She wants to criticize them for cheating, but I hate to tell Washington, if cheating disqualifies you for roles in Washington, we're going to have a mass exodus.
There's one way to drain the swamp. No one here is allowed to cheat. What? So...
Wait, I thought that was already a rule.
All right, guys.
No, I mean on your style.
Hey, the music's about to play. Love you both. Thank you so much. Butters and Lee, every Thursday, here we are. And wow, that was actually a really good segment. That was some good stuff. It's a hoot too, man. I think it's are more, you know, enjoyable than the substantive pieces. All right, we're taking a break. We're coming right back, and I'm jumping into Dipper number two, finally. The last gasp of Lawfare. Are we there? I'll tell you all about it. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on a Turbo Thursday. Going to get you all the way into Snowmageddon. Where are we on Snowmageddon right now? I saw, by the way, earlier today that National Weather Service out of Birmingham is saying we're looking at less snow than they had originally predicted, but it could have more ice.
Yeah.
All right. So what does a meteorologist brother say?
I think his most of the ice prediction was 2 to 4 inches in Huntsville.
Okay.
Which I think
at one point was 4 to 6.
Yeah. On Monday, his prediction was 4 to 6. Now it's about 2 to 4. So it's so whenever I feel like there were so many times in Huntsville, the cutoff line with South Huntsville was about Whitesburg between snow. There was one time I was leaving high school out in Madison and coming home, and as I was coming home, it was just pouring snow, and I was like, "Oh, it's gonna be awesome!" I get home and I get to Whitesburg, and I'm just kind of zoning out driving. I go, "Wait, this is rain!" And I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me!" Well, Madison got 4 inches, and South Huntsville got nothing but cold rain.
Oh yeah, it happens all the time. There's this weird dynamic about the I-59 corridor, which is where Gadsden is.
Yeah,
I-59 running from Birmingham, kind of down northeast up to Chattanooga, and it does that.
Yeah,
it's like there's some kind of weird weather dynamic. But one time I did finally realize that if you look at the lay of the land, a lot of I-59, once you get north of St. Clair County, it's running between ridgelines.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to have something to do that affects the weather and the winds, and I don't know. But all I know is something about that corridor, gets the weather all jimmied up.
I think it's a fair trade-off, though, because we've seen so many tornadoes coming east that the valley kills it off. And so I'll take that over. If there's got to be, the line of snow just above us, I'll take that over, tornadoes. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've all seen that, too, though.
Yeah.
Couple of text messages real quick. Dana from Athens says, "Hey, by the way, Bucky's does not allow semi-trucks." I know.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Just, yeah. But you know what, though? You can always pull up on the side road and walk over if you have to.
Yep.
And I'm surprised that somebody, you know what? I'm surprised somebody hasn't bought the empty ground across from Bucky's and made a semi-parking lot so that people can just pull in over there and then walk to Bucky's.
Yeah. I mean, I know the one in Athens, there's a big old field next to it where they had that concert earlier this year. It's slipping my mind. They had a surprise concert in that lot. But yeah, I mean, that's an empty lot. I don't know if Bucky's owns that or not, but that's opportunity there.
So, wait a minute, is this a business model? We just buy land, and all we do is pour asphalt on it.
Yeah.
And then we charge like $5 a truck. $5 truck parking.
that's a name right there.
Come on in. Go hang out at Bucky's. It's awesome. And oh, by the way, $5. Thank you.
By the way, we got a YouTube comment during that last Butters and Lee segment from Mark Croucher. He said that he agrees with Butters. The Elite are going to be shocked at what the cost to replace this will be.
Talking
about the elite's feeling this in their wallet, maybe changing things.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of which, Charlene just sent me a screenshot of a post by Henry Winkler, you know, from Happy Days.
Mm-hmm.
So if you heard earlier in the show, we had a friend of mine, former California state senator Melissa Melendez, call in. She still lives out there now. She's about 70 miles south of the fire zone. But they're also dealing with things like power outages and all kinds of stuff. But she made the comment, and I wish I had followed up on it now, that there are videos of people actually setting the fires, like arson. Is it homeless people? Is it, what is it? I don't know. But Henry Winkler just posted, this is his post right here, said, "There is an arsonist here in L.A. May you be beaten unrecognizable, the pain you have caused." And, you know, now people are chiming in on that. It's got 1,700 bookmarks on it already, saying, wait, it's not climate change? Or wait a minute, what happens when it turns out to be an illegal alien? Are you going to not be woke anymore?
That's what I was just about to say. I think the most valid quote, if you want to call it a conspiracy theory, I don't. The one that I think would be most likely is that these are, you know, potentially, you know, foreign assets that came in through the border. That this is maybe an attack of some sort. That maybe they knew at the right time to light the fire. That the winds would be this bad. I don't know. I don't know if that. I haven't seen anything that, you know, gives that any credibility. But if there were a theory that I would think would be most likely, I think that would be one.
But if you also, I mean, listen, if they don't find that, but they find that it's homeless people starting fires, well, the homeless problem is a leadership issue in California too. And so if you combine one leadership issue, homelessness, rampant homelessness, with the inability to mitigate the fire's fuel and the reservoirs being full and all the things that the environmentalists caused, then you're looking at a sort of a swirling together, if you will.
Perfect storm,
thank you, of all of the things that makes California politics just so jacked up.
Yeah. I mean,
all you got to find out is it's like an LGBTQ activist that did it, and then you got the whole schmeal.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, whoever it is, if China had, you know, an asset in here that came in through the border. I mean, there's no telling how many of those there are in our country right now. You know, if look, the winds are going to be really bad, you know, right here. You know, if we can strike it, you know, at the right time, like I said, I haven't seen anything that alludes to that, but that wouldn't be I wouldn't be shocked if that were the case. So
I would too. You're getting some text messages, JP. What's this about Keith Urban? Was there something you said earlier?
Oh, I was talking about the guy that did the concert, the surprise concert at Bucky's in that lot. It was Keith Urban.
Yeah, it was.
I couldn't remember which country singer
I'd
was.
Love to
Keith
have seen
Urban.
That too. Yeah. That would have been great. And somebody, Julie Ruff from Marshall County, also said the same thing to Keith Urban. Jeff from Athens texts in and says, "What increases the threat is that it's been very cold for several days. It was so cold this morning, I saw a dog stuck to a fire hydrant." What? What's that got to do? Oh, he's talking about the Snowmageddon. Okay,
yeah.
Now I got you. That's awful. Bob from Madison says, "Did you hear that the mayor of L.A., Ms. Bass, briefed this morning? One thing she said was, please give some wildlife wildlife fund." And then he just texted in. As I'm speaking, he texts in and says, "It's a self-imposed disaster." Which, by the way, your voice text is not working, Bob, just so you know. But I interpreted what you were saying. No, I did not hear that. I did see something up on the screen a moment ago saying that the mayor of L.A., Karen Bass, flubbed some of the information at one of her press briefings. What was that about? Do you know? Is that the same thing?
I haven't looked at the actual press conference, but I've seen that going around. It was a nothing burger. She provided no, you know, valid information.
She was just out there.
I saw something about her trying to rationalize her decision to cut the funding as, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. That's all I hear.
Bert from Owens Crossroads says, California's been messed up for quite some time. In 1994, the voters passed Prop 187, which restricted benefits to illegal aliens. The prop was voided by the legal system and the left. I know, man. It's just, it's us on and on and on. And before I go into my dipper here, John from Huntsville just checked in. He says, I'm changing my snow prediction from Huntsville from half an inch to 10 inches.
What? I think that's because he's seeing the meteorologists. I think his thing is the meteorologists are always wrong.
Whatever they say, go the opposite.
So this is like a false flag. We're actually going to get more than expected.
False flag. I get it. All right, listen, we're going to come back from the next break here in just a minute. And let me lead up to the break by giving you some insight of what we're talking about. Are we seeing the last gasp of lawfare? What do I mean by that? The last gasp of lawfare. Well, lawfare has been the absolute weaponization of the legal system, criminally and civilly. The absolute just weaponization of the legal system. It has been, against Trump, think about all the things. It's not just the Alvin Bragg case. They've had criminal prosecution against him with charges that no one had ever seen or heard of before. We had the special counsel appointed by the Department of Justice and the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, investigating him for crimes against the nation for January 6th and for the storage of classified documents, and yet doing nothing about Biden, who kept some in his garage next to his green Corvette. We had the civil suit in New York with the woman who claimed that he raped her in a department store 40 years ago, and the state legislature changed the statute of limitations laws just to allow her to then bring suit. And so she did, and she got a 90-something million dollar judgment, if I'm not mistaken. It's ungodly. It's so outlandish. And by the way, he was never convicted of rape, but they did come back and say sexual assault. I think it was sexual assault. That's under appeal. And then you have the case with Fannie Willis in Georgia, the election interference case, which has just completely fallen apart, and her own state appellate courts have now removed her from the case because of her gross mismanagement and her questionable ethics. And then, let's not stop there. And then you have, what else? The number of secretaries of state, liberal secretaries of state, like Colorado, Maine, I'm missing one, there's at least three, who literally took it upon themselves to remove Trump from the ballot. And then they had to go into legal fights to get him put back on the ballot simply because a state official just didn't think it was appropriate. Well, that's not the way the law works. And then, of course, you've got the challenges to his candidacy. And then you've got, listen, lawfare has been something that I think will be talked about, written about, and maybe even taught in law school for decades. But most of it got shut down. Listen, it'd be one thing if one of them got shut down. It's amazing when you start seeing all of them get shut down. Well, the last gasps of lawfare appear to be, you heard the old story about, not the old story, I was a lifeguard. I was lifeguard trained, let's put it that way. I got my lifeguard certification years ago. And one of the things they teach you is that a drowning person will drown you trying to save them because of panic. That's what we're seeing right now with lawfare. The lawfare proponents are in panic mode that all the things they thought they would accomplish are for naught. What are we going to do? I don't know. Let's make sure we get the information out there. Let's make sure we say this. Make sure you do that. They're doing everything they can to basically exact a pound of flesh from anyone related to Trump. And it's sick. But I'm hoping what we're seeing are the last gasps. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back from the break. I'll begin telling you about the last gasp of lawfare. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Giving you all the truth you could slap on a bumper sticker. So I'm in this second dipper here. I call it the last gasp of lawfare. Is it? I don't know. Because I mean, you would like to think that they looked at this strategy, and don't tell me this was not a strategy. That's, first of all, let me back up on that. Don't anybody try to pretend this really wasn't a broad-ranging strategy. the legal attacks. And you can't go with the, well, where there's smoke, there's fire, Phil. There was a lot of things to go to court on. No, there weren't. There were just a lot of Democrats wanting to go to court. That's what it was. Isn't it funny? I mean, look at some of the people that, like Letitia James. I forgot about that one. There's another one. The Letitia James lawsuit. The one that is literally trying to devalue Trump's assets and claim that he falsified loan documents to get loans, claiming inflated values to his properties for collateral. When the reality is, everything got paid back and there was no indication that it was devalued. And the judge in that case assigned a value to Mar-a-Lago that doesn't even make sense. Okay, all this to say, Lawfare, a comprehensive effort to just get Trump. From day one, it's mostly unwound. There are parts of it that still exist. There are parts of it that are on appeal. There are parts of it that are not concluded. But for the vast majority of it, it wound up being kind of a womp, womp, womp. I mean, it just like, y'all are feckless. Y'all are just beclowning yourself. Well, now what we're seeing is some of the womp, 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 they are still trying to get some of their stuff out. One of the ones that I think is the most egregious right now is Merrick Garland. I mean, the attorney, could you please just pretend that you're not partisan? Could you just try, maybe pretend that you're not partisan? He can't do that. Merrick Garland, in the final days of the Biden administration, Merrick Garland's, you know, appointed henchman Jack Smith has pretty much been handed his backside legally and has had to back off of. Jack Smith had two investigations, one in D.C. on the supposed January 6th insurrection, and the other in Florida on the issue of whether or not there were mishandling of classified documents. The classified documents case got thrown out, and then the one on January 6th, presidential immunity was ruled on by the Supreme Court, and that one pretty much died on the vine right then. Well, now Merrick Garland wants to release the report. What? So this is not the way this works. You don't get to go, well, we had a grand jury, and we convened, and we were going to indict you, but then we decided not to because we realized the law says you can't be indicted, or the case was going to be thrown out, or maybe it's not as bad as we thought it was. So we're just going to go ahead and tell the world there's a grand jury. That's what they want. They know that this was never an effort to truly put Trump in jail. This was an effort to assassinate his character. That's what it was. So now Merrick Garland, story here on Red State, Dateline yesterday afternoon. Attorney General Merrick Garland's Department of Justice has now formally requested that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals lift an injunction to allow them to release the report of Special Counsel Jack Smith. What? Yep. They want to take everything that Jack Smith thought he had, none of which Trump's ever been convicted for nor ever will be convicted for because it never got to that point, and release it to the public just to make him look bad. There's no other purpose in this. Releasing that report has no value to the system. It has no value to justice. It has no value to the well-being of the nation, and it certainly has no value to the state in terms of having a prosecution of a criminal. They got none of it. They just have a bunch of stuff in there that may have been something if they could have ever made something out of it had been a real case. But they want to release it to the public because, you know, transparency and all that. Transparency. Like Merrick Garland suddenly figured out transparency? What we really have is a very transparent attempt to assassinate the character of Donald Trump, and you can't get him convicted, you're going to at least smear him. More on this and others. Phil Williams, Last Gasp of Lawfare. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern parts of the most beautiful state. I love it. It's right where I am right now. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like all the way up top of Huntsville, down to Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi thrown in, just for good measure. And oh, by the way, have you heard? I spec you have. But if you have not heard, we go live on Monday on WGOW AM 1150 out of Chattanooga, the news talk giant of Chattanooga. Looking forward to being a part of their lineup. And that contract just got signed recently, and we've been sending them all the stuff. They got all the stuff, right?
They got all the stuff.
I looked at the guy who sends the stuff. We got the stuff out there, right? Okay.
Sending the last bit of it after the show.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll be on live in Chattanooga. We're about to be a two-state regional show. So thank you all very much for everything you do to help Rightside, to continue to grow. Hey, by the way, speaking of growing, let me make sure you guys know some stuff, too. Rightside Media is the parent company. You guys are listening to Rightside Radio. That's only one of our productions. Rightside Media has, as it's part of its, its lineup, we have Rightside Radio daily, two to five in Central Time for 3 hours. And then we have four separate podcasts, video podcasts. We have Right Click with Birdman. We have Right Philosophy with me. We have the Liberty Minute with former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And we have the Controversial Mom with Emily Jones of Moms for Liberty. And all four of them are doing great. And they're really something to watch. The production is great. Each one lasts anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes long, and they are up on our website, rightsidemedia.org. And then they got the written thing that comes out every week that gets published all over the region. So just lots of cool stuff happening. Rightside Media is a media company, and we're there for conservative content for ruffians like you.
And by the way, stay tuned on a potential, or not, I don't say potential, upcoming long form podcasts that are in the works. So if any of y'all are, like to listen to the longer form interviews, we got some stuff in the works. So
right now,
the
plan is to call it the Just Right Podcast.
Yep. And start using that brand new studio that y'all saw in election night.
It's just sitting over there. We got to get in there, man.
It's just waiting to get used.
It's just waiting to get used. All right, let me jump back on to Dipper number two, last gasp of lawfare. So a minute ago I told you about the fact that one of the last gasps of lawfare is Merrick Garland is sulking because his boy Jack Smith didn't get a chance to prosecute Trump on two separate cases in two separate jurisdictions on unrelated issues. He thought, sure, he had a thing going on. Guess what? He didn't have a thing going on, and a thing will never go on because it went away on the basis that the cases were due to be dismissed. They didn't even lose on the merits. They were dismissed as cases that cannot be pursued. And yet Merrick Garland believes that the most important thing we could do would be to release to the world the reports of what Jack Smith would have done if he'd actually had a case that was truly prosecutable. That, my friends, is called defamation. That is called nothing but a smear tactic. That's called petulant temper tantrums. I'm the AG, but I can't control myself. I don't know what to do. I'll just tell the world all the mean things that I wish we could have said about him in court. That's just asinine. It's jackassery is what it is. Here's the other one. This one is another one of those last gasps of lawfare. So you know about the Alvin Bragg case where they got 34 felony counts, convictions. Oh, my gosh, Trump's a convicted felon. Well, no, he's not. First of all, the 34 felony counts were actually the same unusual, never-before-been-used charge where they took a misdemeanor under state law and then said that since it related to something that might have been campaign finance-related, that made it a federal tie-in so they could then be able to craft a sort of a hybrid of a state misdemeanor into a federal felony, but we'll try it in state court. No one's ever done this. Why it got allowed to pursue, I don't know. But they wireworked this thing into a novel case of first impression. Trump was convicted on 34 counts, they say. What were those 34 counts? All these separate things? He did 34 things, but no. Each check he wrote for the exact same thing, they counted that as a separate felony. They like to say it's 34 felony counts. It's 34 checks of the exact same thing, all of which is appealable. So, he's not a convicted felon under the law until he's had the appeals process, well, technically, until he's been sentenced. Okay, which is going to be appealable on a variety of grounds. Like, there's so many things that happen in this trial that you look at and go, how'd that guy ever become a judge? Well, Judge Juan Merchan has decided he's going to sentence Trump, like, tomorrow. What? Yes. Like, does he know that he's about to be inaugurated as President of the United States? There's kind of a lot going on right now. He's at Jimmy Carter's state funeral today. He's got all the inauguration stuff. He's still picking his cabinet. But you're going to interpose a sentencing tomorrow. Yes. Well, I mean, certainly that's the judicial discretion, they call it. Set the calendar. The judge has his docket. He sets the calendar. Let me explain something about the court system. It is far more flexible than you would imagine. Judicial discretion goes both ways. Judicial discretion says, do the sentencing now. And judicial discretion would say, do the sentencing a little later. If this were a murder trial and Trump was about to take office, but he had blood on his hands, I would get it. But here's the kicker. Judge Merchan came out just the other day and said that he does not anticipate any sentencing that would involve jail time or overly punitive measures. What? Well, then why do you need to do sentencing? They want it badly so that he can go to the inaugural as a convicted felon. That's what they want. They want a convicted felon who's on appeal at the inaugural. There's no other purpose in it. Well, maybe Judge Womershawn just wants to clear his docket. Right. Because it's taking up a lot of his time? No, it's not. The trial's over. He's gonna lose on appeal. Now, the one thing I will say is once the sentencing takes place, the appeal process begins. But there's no reason in the world why he has to look at the most important job in the world as president of the United States as being secondary to a non-punitive judicial determination of sentencing. This makes no sense. By the way, just so you know, Trump has immediately filed for a stay of the proceedings. The stay of the proceedings went to the appellate courts in New York, and they were rejected. So the appellate courts in New York said, no, if the judge wants to do it, you're just going to do it. We now have an appeal before the Supreme Court of the United States. Supreme Court of the United States, the way they work that situation is the various justices have oversight over different regions of the nation as to what they will, quote unquote, take up. The question of whether it's going to be taken up falls to Justice Sotomayor. Very liberal. Will she take it up? We should know in the next hour or so, I would think. Because it's going to have to be a determination rendered today because the sentencing is tomorrow morning. This whole thing is just, it's the last gasp of lawfare. That judge really won. I'm gonna be in the papers. I'm going to have a book deal. I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to be the one they said he actually got Trump. I got news. SCOTUS has a chance to answer. But you know what? In the end, Judge Juan Merchan's got a lot to answer for. And I suspect that the appellate courts are going to see this for what it is. I got time for the... Yeah, I will. Okay. Here's an interesting dynamic on Fannie Willis. Oh, Phil, did you go there? I did. Got a piece from the Daily Signal. Fannie Willis, headline, Fulton County taxpayers pay for Fannie Willis's outrageous misbehavior again. I mean, you couldn't write a movie script like this. Got this from the Daily Signal. So believe it or not, with everything going on and Fannie making a fool of herself, having an affair with her co-counsel who really wasn't even qualified to be a prosecutor. She just brought him in because that was her lover boy and they took trips and she paid him twice as much as any other contract lawyer and it was kind of messed up. Well, we just got new decisions rendered against her where she's being chastised for improper behavior. It's like, how did you get elected? For that matter, how did you get reelected? But just know this, we don't know the actual outcome yet, but here's the thing. The last gasp of lawfare on Fannie Willis is that the appellate courts in Georgia removed her from the case. She is no longer allowed to prosecute the thing that she said was a major case that needed to be pursued. She and Loverboy have both been taken off. And she was actually admonished. It was not a little bit. She was admonished. So what I'm waiting for now is to see whether or not her state bar association is going to consider her for review for ethics violations. Because for her to be admonished for ethics violations clearly indicates they had enough there to work with that the state bar should now take action. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. The case against Trump is now floundering. No one's going to take that case up. But the part that I like, as much as I like the fact that it's going to be done against Trump, is if you remember, Fannie Willis had 18 different people that she indicted, whose lives she began to ruin to get Trump. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of them go, wait a minute, I'm going to go ahead and appeal this now. Or I'm going to resist it now. Or I'm going to say, guess what? You can just go pound sand. All right, we're taking a break right now. Last break of the day. Y'all, I'm just telling you, Snowmageddon coming. What do you think? Snowmageddon. John from Huntsville says 10 inches now. I don't think so. I don't think so, John. But I think we're getting something. Coming right back, get some text messages and wind up the day. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Got some great text messages here from some great audience members. So let me jump in there real quick and see what we got. Greg from Madison. Where'd he go? Greg from Madison says, FYI, he says, Ed Meese filed an amicus brief today supporting Trump's Supreme Court stay petition. Good. I'm glad. It's going to be interesting to see how this goes. But, man, they've got today to make the decision. I don't think they've even said yet whether they intend to take it up. There's that. Brian from Huntsville says, John, our truck driving friend, this is heartfelt. If you get stuck, we have a cot for you. Also, a right parking space a quarter mile away. There you go. Listen, I think what we're hearing there is Jeff Rowe from Indiana, you're squared away. If you need help, there are ruffians in the area. What else we got? John from Huntsville says Phil and JP both get an A++ for their equally amazing performances. Means today's winner is obviously Jeff from Indiana with a perfect A++. Wow. So congratulations. Please stay safe on the icy roads. Also, just want to say temperature and timing is everything, and meteorologists are usually wrong on both, so I'm sticking with 10 inches. Okay, fair enough. Call your brother, tell him. It's off. It's off. Jeff from Indiana checking in says, here's a photo so I can take the same photo again tomorrow for comparison. Oh, he took a picture of Bucky's with no snow. So we'll see tomorrow if he has Bucky's with snow. or is that the Bucky? That's just the Bucky's.
It says the
billboard.
25 miles away from a Bucky's.
Oh, it is. I see it. Where I know where that is, as a matter of fact. Casey Junebug from Hartzell says, I also think that what they've done to Rudy Giuliani is criminal. Yes, they are trying to destroy that man. And the very idea that they awarded damages to the level that they did, and they're now trying to liquidate his assets and bankrupt him. I mean, at what point do punitive damages not become so outlandish that there's no way in the world they could support that on appeal? But right now, it's still hanging in. Big Al from Harvest says, is it true that Joe Biden fell asleep during Jimmy Carter's funeral ceremony? We don't know, but we have video that appears to show him napping.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Now, but by the way, right now, all I've seen is a picture.
Yeah.
So that could be a picture that was snapped as he was blinking, you know?
Yeah, but would we be surprised?
Maybe just she's just kind of checking out the inside of his eyelids.
Yeah.
Making sure things are still okay.
Yeah. You know, you got to do that every
long
now and then.
Long blinks.
Yeah.
Long blinks.
You got to, especially when you're of Joe Biden's age.
But he did fall asleep at the ceremony for the fallen, the dead in the New Orleans terror incident.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, has dropped off the news now. Of course, I guess the fires, it makes sense. They got to cover the fires right now in California. But Joe Biden may very well have fallen asleep today, but the other thing that was talked about a lot, though, you saw the interactions that were going on there.
Yeah, so there was
all five of the presidents.
Yeah, George W., and then Obama, and the Clintons, and Trump, and Melania. But then clip's been going viral of Kamala walking up. She was sitting in a row in front of them.
Yeah.
And first of all, didn't shake hands with anybody, didn't acknowledge anybody. Everybody was kind of sitting there staring at her, waiting for her to do something. She did none of that. So then she sits down and looks back as Trump and Obama are sitting and laughing with each other, and she just kind of sits forward, and the look on her face was not a happy one.
The look on her face says someone's going to die tonight.
She appeared to be very upset to see that. But another interesting interaction that I saw when Jill and Joe Biden showed up and sat next to Kamala, not a warm interaction.
Whoa.
So as in a...
Really?
Like there was a, like, I guess the guy to the ceremony and in Joe Biden's seats, Joe handed Kamala the guides so that she could sit down and then proceeded to take the guides back and then kind of turned her shoulder like this away from her. They did not have a warm interaction.
Wow.
So
none of this, how are you? Good to see you.
No,
you okay?
there was no greeting from Kamala and Joe either, which is funny because they are the sitting vice president and president. So,
wow.
It was a lot of cool interaction.
Yeah, in fact, I'm watching. I see it now. It's up on the screen. And so there's Biden. He's sitting down. His wife is doing the very indifferent, try not to make eye contact to my left because that's Kamala. But what else is also interesting is Kamala Harris's husband, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Doug Emhoff,
thank you. He's not even looking their way. I mean, you know, when people sit down, you kind of look over and acknowledge and just kind of give them a nod or something like that. Something friendly. It doesn't have to be a big interaction. But he's not. He just it's like he doesn't even want to look over there as they come and sit down.
It's funny. It was funny how that dynamic was happening, and then a row behind them, Obama and Trump are sitting like laughing with each other.
They were yucking it up, man.
They were laughing and talking. Yeah, it's kind of crazy that Obama, after literally trying to bury Trump, can able to laugh with him, and then on vice versa, Trump able to laugh with Obama, who tried to ruin his career and his life. So
the reality is, in the political realm, you have to be able to occasionally compartmentalize, because you're going to work with someone later. Or in this case, too, Obama is able to know that he's got nothing to lose. I mean, he's a multimillionaire. He's living on, you know, his island retreat and is pretty secure. And he's already been the president. He's not going to run for office anymore. So I don't know. I just look at it and go, yeah, I get it on the one hand, but it's also – it's interesting to watch. The dynamic is interesting to watch.
I always love these, you know, settings where we get all of the former presidents and, you know, current president together to see how the dynamics work. It's fascinating.
The other funny thing, though, is that there are lip readers now that are trying to tell us what they believe is being said between Trump and Obama.
I've seen that, too, yeah. I expected that to come up.
All right, you guys, listen, the music's about to play. So let me just say this. We don't know what the weather holds tonight. We do know we have some winter weather coming our way. And so be careful on the roads, especially those of y'all that live on places like Montesano Mountain, Sand Mountain, and other great kind of slopey areas in and around the listening area. Just be careful on the roads. If you don't have to go out, don't go out, because down here we ain't that good at driving in it. But that being said, take care of your pets, take care of your plants, take care of your house, and make sure that you stay safe. And we will see you here tomorrow, because right now the absolute plan is for JP and I to be in studio. By the way, don't forget, there's more of us than there are them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight.